Ah, you're here. Good.
A ghost couldn't dig a grave, make John strangle me to death.
Lights out, everybody.
Welcome to the Old Time Radio Cast, where we take the most terrifying tales from the golden age of radio, clean them up, and remaster them for your listening pleasure, truly preserving the very best era of audio entertainment with stories of suspense, mystery, and horror. This week we present you with two episodes of the radio series The Whistler. Along with its trademark whistling theme, The Whistler's stories are known for their clever plots involving murder, robbery, or fraud, often putting you in the shoes of the bad guys in an attempt to convey a sense of thrill and suspense. First, we have a story titled Witness at the Fountain, followed by The Strange Sisters. Enjoy the show.
The Signal Oil Program, The Whistler. That whistle is your signal for the Signal Oil Program, The Whistler.
I am the Whistler, and I know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak.
Yes, friends, it's time for the Whistler, rated by independent research the most popular West Coast radio program. And remember, let every traffic signal remind you, with new Signal gasoline, you do go farther than ever. Look for the familiar big yellow and black circle sign that identifies those popular Signal service stations throughout the West from Canada to Mexico. And now, the Whistler's strange story, The Witness at the Fountain.
There were two things about Randy Dean that set him apart from the rest of the world. Basic inner things that made him different. The first one was clear enough on first meeting. He was a newspaper columnist, of course, but in a world of happy-go-lucky newspaper men, Randy was careful and methodical, living his life according to plan, scheduling each day down to the minute. No, there was nothing slovenly or happy-go-lucky about Randy. He'd mentally blueprinted his future on the first day he went to work on the Harristown Tribune some years before, and had set to work building his career like a ship. In the course of construction, naturally enough, he came to New York, took a position on the Star Express, and, according to plan, married the publisher's daughter. And now, though he was a syndicated columnist at the top of the ladder, he saw no reason to let down. The methodical planning, the schedule, still went on. From major events at the newspaper right down to the problem of his white shirt.
Cynthia! Cynthia, where are you? Cynthia!
Yes, Randy?
Come here a moment, will you?
Just a minute. Put the aides on, will you, Anna? Mr. Dean will be ready for breakfast. Yes, dear?
It's 7:55.
You're behind schedule.
I've been looking for a white shirt for the past 10 minutes. Where did Anna put them?
Oh, I forgot to tell you, dear. She didn't send them out to the laundry until Friday.
Friday? They go out on Wednesdays. She knows that.
Oh, you have to make allowances, dear. After all, the poor girl's just become engaged.
Hang it, Cynthia. Her engagement has nothing to do with it. The point is that white shirts are scarce as hen's teeth, and unless she sends them out on Wednesday when she's supposed to...
Not so loud. She'll hear you.
I don't care if she does. It's about time somebody talked to her. It isn't only the shirts. My gray sharkskin suit is still hanging in the closet.
What about that?
It's Monday, darling. My suits go to the cleaners Monday morning. I've told her a dozen times.
But you won't wear it again for weeks.
I want it ready when I need it.
All right, dear. I'll tell her. Now, you won't say a word to her about it at breakfast, will you?
Oh, very well, Cynthia.
I'll go and see how your eggs are coming.
All right. Oh, Cynthia.
Yes?
No 2.5-minute eggs this time. 3.
Yes, that was one of the unusual things about Randy Dean, the public one. The other, the private one, was even more unusual, for Randy was basically a criminal. The reason, for example, that he was so irritated about his shirts and his sharkskin suit became clear that very afternoon in the American wing of the Metropolitan Museum of Art. He was sitting inconspicuously with a dapper little gray-haired man before a painting by Gilbert Stuart, properly attentive as the guide discussed its merits before a small group of spectators.
In the portrait of Washington, perhaps his most famous, we find Stuart at his best. The delicacy of line, the careful delineation of character, expression, and so on. Let's pass on now to another example of the artist's work, the portrait of John Jay. Are you coming, gentlemen?
No, thank you. We'll sit here a moment longer, if you don't mind.
All right.
Let's get it over with, Broden. How much this time?
$250, naturally.
That's what I thought. Here you are.
Thanks. Going to have to raise it, you know. Inflation.
Raise it all you want. You'll still get $250.
A rash statement, Mr. Dean, if I've ever heard one. You'll pay what I ask when I ask it. I have a career, too, you know.
Career?
A more honorable one than yours, at that. At least it didn't include the murder of my first wife as the most convenient way of marrying a newspaper. And poison at that. The lowest form of murder, Mr. Dean.
Be quiet, will you?
Oh, we're quite alone, Mr. Dean. And I feel like talking. Yes. I had a career in mind, too. You see, I didn't plan to spend the rest of my days as a laboratory technician in a coroner's office. So when the post-mortem was called on the death of the first Mrs. Dean and I discovered poison in her stomach, I said to myself, Broden, here's opportunity knocking on the door like a woodpecker. No use sending the poor man off to the gallows. He'll be grateful to you. Be happy to support you the rest of your life.
You're a born optimist, aren't you?
I'm thoroughly practical, Mr. Dean. And what with living costs rising and all that, well, I'm afraid beginning next week it'll be $350.
What?
Right?
I'll have to think it over.
Otherwise, I simply write a letter back to Harristown. They'd be only too happy to exhume the body of poor Mrs. Dean.
That's enough!
All right. Now, where will I meet you next week?
I'll call you. Just tell me where I can reach...
Oh, no. I'll call you, Mr. Dean. Good day.
Yes, Randy. Mr. Broden had a blueprint for his future, too. And for more than 4 years now, you've been meeting him secretly once a week. First it was $100, then $200. Next week, $350. And all he has to do is remind you of the first Mrs. Dean to make you, cooperate. Yes, in his way, Mr. Broden is just as meticulous as you are. He realizes, of course, that his career depends upon yours. And he's been very careful to keep your meeting secret, so that nobody has the slightest suspicion that any connection between the two of you exists. That fact suddenly becomes important a few days later. Terry Lund of the Homicide Department is your guest for lunch at the press club. And of course, he falls back on his favorite subject, crime detection.
I'm afraid I don't get it, Terry. What do you mean, murder is a paradox?
It's very simple. The more effort you put into it, the more you try to cover up your tracks, the easier it is for us to come up with the answer.
Oh, now, wait a minute,
no,
Terry.
No, it's a fact, so help me. I've seen it happen hundreds of times. The Fancy Dan kind of killer is a lead pipe cinch. It's the stupid ones that worry us.
Well, what do you mean by that?
Well, we start with a corpse, right?
Yeah.
First, we identify the guy.
Mm-hmm.
Next, we start looking for motives.
Yeah.
Connections between the corpse and the people who might have reason to kill him.
Right.
Now, that's where the stupid criminal gives us a headache.
Huh?
Oh, sure, you're a newspaper man. You ought to know that. Just look at the dozens of little three-line fillers that you throw in at the bottom of the columns in the back of the paper. Unidentified robbery victim, man found in alley, suspected suicide on beach.
Yeah.
Why, every one a case where some stupid bohunk just walked up to someone he'd never seen before and slugged him and walked away. So there we are, standing around a corpse, all dressed up and no place to go. You get it?
I never thought of it in that way. You know, that's interesting, Terry. I might do a column on it.
You better let me read it first.
OK. connection, no motive.
Tell you what I'll do. I'll give you a ring next time we run into one. Let you in on it firsthand. How about it?
Thanks, Terry. Thanks. I'd like to get in on one firsthand.
No connection, Randy. No way you could possibly be implicated should your friend, Mr. Broden, find himself in one of those little three-line fillers at the bottom of page 8. It suddenly seems so simple that you wonder why you balked at murder a second time. Why you submitted to Mr. Broden's demands for 4 long years. And at that point, you make up your mind. The next meeting with Mr. Broden will be his last. As usual, his call comes in late Saturday evening and you're ready for it.
I tell you, I'm all tied up, Broden, until 11 Sunday night. I can't meet you at all, unless, of course, you can make it rather late.
I see. How late?
11:15. But that's ridiculous. Why not make
I'll meet you at 11:15.
But don't you think it would be...
It's settled, Mr. Dean. Now, where?
Well, how about the fountain in Jackson Park?
Fountain in Jackson Park. Okay. You realize, naturally, that it's an ungodly hour. I trust it won't happen again.
Don't worry, Broden. I can almost promise you it won't happen again.
With the prologue of The Witness at the Fountain, the Signal Oil Company brings you another strange tale by The Whistler. But now here's a question for you drivers to try your wits on. What 3 things can your speedometer tell you? 3, that is. Now, let's see, whom shall I ask? Oh, here's Virginia Gregg, one of Hollywood's most charming radio actresses. What would your answer be, Virginia?
Well, let's see, Marvin. Your speedometer tells you how fast you're going.
That's 1.
And your speedometer tells you how far you've gone.
That's 2.
But that 3rd thing your speedometer tells you... You've got me there. What is it?
You mean you didn't know that your speedometer also measures the quality of the gasoline you're using?
Tell me more, Marvin.
Precisely what I plan to do. After all, isn't it only logical that a gasoline that gets more efficient performance from your motor also gets more miles from each gallon?
Yes.
Well, when science put amazingly increased power into today's Signal gasoline, they naturally gave you quicker starting, faster pickup, and quieter, higher anti-knock. And it's because of this improved performance that you now go farther than ever with Signal gasoline.
So that's why Signal says, look to your speedometer for the best proof of gasoline quality.
Right, for it takes extra quality to go farther, which explains why so many smart drivers are switching to Signal, the famous Go Farther gasoline. And now, back to the Whistler.
So you've finally made your decision, Randy. Mr. Broden's appointment with you at the fountain at Jackson Park at 11:15 Sunday night will be his last. No more secret meetings, no more blackmail, no more threats. And it'll be the stupid type of murder, the kind of crime Lieutenant Terry Lunn told you it was almost impossible to trace. The kind in which there is no connection between murderer and victim, no traceable motive. Because you're positive that no connection between you and Mr. Broden will ever come to light. Both of you have been too careful to keep it a secret. But murder, even the stupid kind, is a terrifying thing. And it's hard for you to keep your mind on your work during the next few days. Harder still to sleep at night. It takes all your time, doesn't it, Randy? Just thinking about it.
Randy.
Huh?
What's the matter, dear? You almost jumped out of your chair.
You startled me. I was just thinking... about Monday's column.
Well, we should forget that old newspaper for 5 minutes. I'm getting worried about you. Randy, I was talking to Barbara Melvin today. She and Jimmy are coming over Sunday night, you know.
What? What did you say?
The Melvins, dear. You knew they were coming for dinner Sunday night.
You didn't tell me anything of the kind.
I'm sorry, Randy. I must...
You'll have to make it another night.
But, dear, it's all set.
I'm sorry, Cynthia. Sunday night is out. I'm simply not up to having company for the rest of the week. I'm tired out, exhausted... Terrible pressure at the office.
All right, Randy, dear. You don't have to explain. I understand.
I'm I'm glad you do.
You don't have to tell me, Randy.
What? Tell you what?
Why, you're acting this way. I'll simply tell the Melvins it will have to be another night. That's all.
Yes, Randy, it does make you a little jumpy, doesn't it? But you keep telling yourself it's worth it. That after Sunday night, you'll be a new man. And strangely, when Sunday finally arrives, you discover you're more relaxed, cooler than you expected to be. It's 6 o'clock when you stop at the corner drugstore on the way home for a box of sleeping powders.
Here you are, sir. That'll be 52.
You say this is perfectly harmless?
Oh, yeah, sure. Wouldn't make a habit of it, though. Yeah, 55. Give me 5. Come on.
Tasteless, huh?
Almost. Might take it in orange juice or maybe wine.
Excellent dinner, dear. That steak was delicious.
You might tell Anna.
Hmm?
I think you've been very unreasonable with Anna during the past week,
You're
Randy.
You're perfectly right. I'll make it up to her right now. Anna! Anna!
Yes, sir. Oh, your coffee. I forgot.
Oh, not at all, Anna. Not at all. I want to ask your forgiveness. Cynthia tells me I've been quite unreasonable, and I agree with her.
Oh, Mr. Dean, I don't know what to say.
Well, let me say it, then. I'm sorry.
It's quite all right, sir.
And now I think it's high time we did something about your engagement, Anna. A toast. That's it. A toast.
A toast?
You sit right down here in my chair. I'll go out in the kitchen and pour the wine.
Oh, my goodness, Randy, I don't know what's the matter with me. I'm dead to the world, and it's only 9.
Where's Anna?
In bed. She gave up the ghost a half hour ago.
Well, might as well go to bed. I'm tired, too.
Oh, the wine, I suppose.
What?
Always affects me that way. You should know better than to give me wine after dinner, dear. Come on, let's go to bed.
Yes, Randy, it must have been the wine. By 10 o'clock, Cynthia is sound asleep. Both she and Anna would swear you were here all night. But it will never come to that, will it? The corridor's deserted when you quietly leave the apartment and tiptoe down the hall and ring for the automatic elevator.
Oh, confound it, wouldn't you know? What's keeping that elevator? Which way is the elevator? Right around the corner of the arrival. Okay, thanks a lot. We'll find Thank heaven.
Oh, yeah, here we are. Hey, hold it, will you?
I guess somebody's in a hurry.
You wish you hadn't picked the fountain. It's too exposed. Lawn stretching in every direction from the path around it. The shrubbery and trees at least 50 yards away. But luckily, the light over the fountain is blown out. The darkness will cover you.
Dean?
Over here.
Dark as pitch. Why in the world you ever picked a godforsaken place like this? It's the last time, Dean. If you think I'm going through with this again...
I told you it wouldn't happen
again. It better not happen again. Where's the money?
Here. You want to count it, I suppose?
Count it? I can't even see my hand in front of my...
I told you this was the last time, Broden.
It's all over now, Randy. You let him slump to the ground.
Yeah, Broden. The last time.
Now, his identification. The contents of his pockets. Suit label, laundry marks. It should only take you a minute. And then...
Down this way, Eddie, by the fountain. Yeah.
No way to run, Randy. Lawn in all directions. He'd be sure to hear you. And then you see a park bench a few feet away at the edge of the path. It's your only chance.
great life, huh, Eddie?
What do you mean, great life?
Yo-ho, for the life of a night maintenance man, running around in the middle of the night hunting for blowing out bulbs.
You sense that light over the fountain?
Yeah.
I'll go back to the truck and get a line.
Check. Stone cold dead in the market. Stone cold dead. Hey, what's the matter, pal?
My friend here is he's a little drunk, I'm afraid. I was walking him through the park, and I...
Ah, so help me, you like all the rest of them. Now, that's no way to do, pal. You got to keep him walking. You never sober a guy up by letting him pass out on you, sitting on a bench like that.
He'll be all right.
Oh, now, look, you're talking to an experienced drunk, brother. Yeah, let's walk him some more. Let me give him a hand.
Don't. I tell you, he'll be all right.
Oh, now, don't get sore about it. I'm only trying to help.
Just let me alone.
Well, you know, if it was me, I'd trot him around the fountain 4 or 5 times. And then you know what?
I don't care what. Please go on.
Then I dunked his head right in a fountain. Yeah, that'd stop it out of him. Like that. Hey, come on. Come on, let's give it a try.
Get away, I tell you, I...
Stan!
Yeah?
Ain't got no 300 watt bulb.
You sure?
Yeah.
He's nuts. There's a whole box of them there. Stick around, Pally. I'll be right back.
Your knees are so weak you can hardly get up off the bench as the night maintenance man walks back to his truck. You know, you have about 30 seconds to get him across the lawn to the shrubbery, but somewhere you find the strength. The shrubbery seems a mile away, but finally you make it.
There. Drag him inside.
Oh, don't be that way, Julie. Come on, give us a little kiss, huh? I told you you're my big heart.
Art.
Huh?
Someone in the bushes.
Where?
Right over there.
Hey! Hey, who's there?
You sure? I heard it.
Okay, my friend, I'm coming in there.
No, no! There he goes. I'll get you one.
Julie, there's a body in here.
You thank heaven for the darkness. At least they couldn't see you. The maintenance man, that kid and his girl, they'll never be able to identify you in a million years, will they, Randy? An hour later, you're back in the apartment, safe in bed, with Cynthia sound asleep at the other side of the room. Still safe, Randy. Still no connection, no motive. Still safe. Still safe.
Randy, darling.
What? Oh, what time is this, Cynthia?
I hope you don't mind, dear. I let you oversleep 45 whole minutes. You seem so exhausted.
Oh, yeah, I was exhausted.
Anna's bustling around in the kitchen now, getting your breakfast.
Well, better get up.
Randy, you're a sweetheart. Hmm? You know, sometimes I tell myself I'm married to an old stick. Then you surprise me like you did last night, and I know I'm wrong.
Last night?
You made a new woman out of Anna. It was a nice thing to do.
What are you talking about, Cynthia?
Apologizing to her that way, dear, and the wine. She was almost in tears.
Oh, that.
And believe me, it worked. You don't catch flies with vinegar, you know. She got your cleaning off this morning right on the dot. And there's a big sign on the kitchen calendar. Laundry Wednesday.
Well, I hope she keeps it up. Better get going. I'm never going to get to work.
Oh, that reminds me, Randy.
Hmm?
Terry Lunn called.
What do you want?
Well, I don't know. I told him you were asleep, and he said to have you call when you got to the office.
That's all he said?
Why, yes. Is it that important?
Why?
You're white as a sheet.
Police headquarters, Sergeant Baker.
Lieutenant Lunn, please.
Just a minute. Lieutenant Lunn.
Terry, this is Randy Dean.
Wow, Rip Van Winkle in the flesh. First time I ever caught you in the hay. What happened to that schedule?
Well, you better talk to Cynthia. She let me oversleep. What's on your mind?
Oh, our friend, the stupid murderer. He said something about wanting to get in on the next one.
Oh?
Now we got one. Kind of bum example, but I thought you might be interested. Guy got knocked off at a fountain in Jackson Park last night. Strangled.
Oh, is that so?
Yeah.
You got any leads?
Leads? Brother, we got the guy.
What do you mean?
That's what I mean by bad example. This time the killer was too stupid. Maybe you'd rather wait, Randy. Might be something more interesting turning up.
No, no, Terry. I'll be right over.
The Whistler will return in just a moment with the strange ending of tonight's story. Meantime, I'd like to take this opportunity to thank the many of you who have dropped me a line telling of your experiences with Signal products or of little extra services you've enjoyed at dealer-owned Signal service stations. Mr. A.M. Stevens, for instance, of 7274 Fountain Avenue, Los Angeles, was kind enough to write.
As a former independent businessman, an automobile dealer on Long Island, may I express my appreciation for the service I received on my first visit to a Signal station. Now, my car had scarcely come to a halt at the pump when the attendant wiped off the windshield. Now, then he asked about the air and water. After offering all the service he could, he finally got around to selling some gasoline. But perhaps this is not of the ordinary for a Signal dealer, as Signal seems to realize that the man at the pump is one of the most important men in the organization. The Signal dealer at 7318 Sunset Boulevard certainly lives up to your claims by showing as much interest in serving a customer as in selling him. It's a real pleasure to have your car serviced by dealers like this. From now on, I'll be with Signal all the way.
Thank you, Mr. Stevens. Signal Oil Company is genuinely grateful for such expressions from the motoring public. Letters that make independent Signal dealers want to do an ever better job of caring for your car. And now, back to the Whistler.
There was no connection between you and Mr. Broden, Randy. You repeat it over and over in your mind as you hurry across town to Terry Lund's office in the homicide department. No connection. No way they could link you with the murder at the fountain in Jackson Park. And yet Terry told you just 15 minutes ago that they had the killer already. Some itinerant, perhaps. Some wayward bum who happened by at the wrong moment. Well, no matter. Mr. Broden is out of the way and a bum goes to the chair and that's that. 10 minutes later, you lean back in a chair and try and appear unconcerned as Terry goes over the story you knew
so
pretty well already.
Maintenance man sees the two of them sitting there on the bench. The killer pretends the dead man is drunk, you see? Oh, yes.
We just went over the records at the cleaning plant, Chief, and found out the cleaner the suit came from.
Oh, good. Where?
The Elite Cleaners on 86th Street. Shall I call him and get the guy's name?
No, we better go out there. Get a couple of men. We'll be down in a second. Mr. Dean will go out with us.
Right.
So the guy bluffs it out, and then when the maintenance man goes back to his truck, this guy tosses the body into some bushes and runs, leaving the world's best witness behind him at the fountain. That's what I mean by too stupid, you see.
Witness? What do you mean, a witness?
Yeah, he might as well have tied himself to that body with a pair of handcuffs. Well, come on, let's go.
Wait a minute, Terry. Tell me, what...
He was all through the minute he left his suit at the cleaner's this morning.
What do you mean, witness?
The bench, Randy, the park bench. With a nice coat of wet green paint.
Next Monday at 9 o'clock, the Whistler will bring you another strange tale. The Whistler is broadcast for your entertainment by the marketers of Signal gasoline and motor oil and fine quality automotive accessories, and by your neighborhood Signal dealer. Featured in tonight's program were Howard Duff and Margaret Brayton. This program, directed by George W. Allen, with tonight's story by Harold Swanton, music by Wilbur Hatch, is transmitted to our troops overseas by the Armed Forces Radio Service. That whistle is your signal for the Signal Oil program, The Whistler. This is Marvin Miller speaking, reminding you to look for those familiar yellow and black circle signs that identify those popular Signal Oil stations throughout the West from Canada to Mexico. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System. The Signal Oil Program, The Whistler. That whistle is your signal for the Signal Oil Program, The Whistler.
The Whistler, and I know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak.
Yes, friends, it's time for The Whistler. And remember, let every traffic signal remind you, with new Signal gasoline, you do go farther than ever. Look for the familiar big yellow and black circle sign that identifies those popular Signal service stations in 7 western states from Canada to Mexico. And now, the Whistler's strange story, The Strange Sisters.
The three Randall girls were as different from each other as day and night. Even the people of Newton who had watched them grow up found it hard to accept the fact that they were sisters. Pamela, the eldest, was forceful and overbearing, heavy-set and unattractive. Kathy, the youngest, was a weakling. Life was a little too complicated for her, and she found the easiest solution was to let Pamela face it, to bring her problems to Pamela, to listen meekly to Pamela's instructions, and then to quietly obey. Yes, Pamela and Kathy were two extremes. And Sally, the third sister, was in the middle, both in age and temperament. The combination of Pamela's strength and Kathy's frailty had produced in Sally a kind of radiance that had made life easy for her, that had made her sure of success where her sisters had failed. And the more she succeeded, the harder it became for Pamela and Kathy to face it. Until one morning, Mrs. Stokes, the housekeeper, called Kathy for breakfast. There was no answer.
Miss Kathy, your breakfast is on the table. Oh, that girl takes a team of horses to get her out of bed. Miss Kathy! Your breakfast is ready, young lady, and I ain't going to keep it warm for you another moment. Miss Kathy, answer me. I know you're... Good Lord. Locked. Now, my key. Here. Miss Kathy, what are you... Gas. The heater. Oh, where's the handle? There. Miss Pamela! Miss Pamela, come up quick! Oh, the window. There. Miss Pam!
What's the matter? What's the matter, Mrs. Stokes?
It's Kathy. She's... Oh, Miss Pamela.
Yes.
Miss Kathy? Miss Kathy?
Here, here, let me.
Yes.
Kathy. Kathy, dear.
Yes.
Let me see. Her pulse. Mm. Oh, she's alive. Call Dr. Johnson quickly.
Well, do you think she's...
Don't stand there like an idiot. Call the doctor.
Yes, Miss Pamela. Right away.
Hello, Pamela.
Well, it's nice of you to leave your work, Sally.
That's a peculiar remark to make.
I think it's apropos of the moment.
I don't.
As usual, I suppose we disagree.
Where is she?
In there, with Dr. Johnson.
Will she be all right?
I don't know yet.
Well, I'm going in and...
Wait a minute. You're not going in there.
You can't stop me, Pamela. I've got a right to know. And since you didn't choose to tell me over the phone, I'll find out for myself.
I said wait.
Kathy is my sister, too, Pamela. She doesn't belong to you. You've had her under your thumb for so long, the poor girl can't even think for herself.
All right, go on in if you want to kill her.
What do you mean by that? I've managed to convince Dr. Johnson it was an accident.
It was an accident. She left the gas heater on
You've never been very clever, Sally. Kathy tried to kill herself.
You're wrong. You're making it up. She didn't have a reason.
I admit it wasn't a very good reason, but it's been used 1,000 times.
Go on.
It's a man, Sally, and a rather shabby specimen at that.
She was in love?
Yes.
How long has it been going on?
6 months or more.
You're sure?
Of course I'm sure.
Who is it, Pamela?
Your fiancé.
Henry? Why, oh, you're wrong. You must be wrong. He never gave her any reason. He's hardly even spoken to her.
You asked me and I told you.
Pamela, where did Kathy get the idea that Henry French was in love with her? Tell me, Pamela, where did it come from?
I don't know.
You stepped into that part of her life too, didn't you? Answer me.
Oh, come now, Sally. Don't distort that pretty finishing school face of yours. It's your biggest asset, you know. It's gotten you everything you ever wanted. There's no end to what it can do.
How can you be so contemptible?
Maybe I was wrong. Maybe you are clever, insinuating your way into father's confidence, bowing and scraping, playing the faithful daughter when he was ill. That's why father left everything to you when he died. $50,000 and 2 sisters to provide for. If and when you felt like it. We're your favorite charity, aren't we? That's part of the act, too. Lady Bountiful.
I've heard all I want to hear, Pamela.
Very well, perhaps you'd better go.
I'm going to see Kathy whether you like it or not. You see, I was wrong. I'm admitting it.
Oh?
I was wrong in leaving you and Kathy under the same roof. I just hope it isn't too late to do anything about it.
Perhaps you're forgetting it's my roof, too.
As long as I choose to let you stay here, Pamela. Funny, isn't it, Pamela? You try to be fair. You try to do the right thing, and it all blows up in your face. Well, Dr. Johnson?
I think she's going to be all right.
May I see her, doctor?
She asked for Pamela.
Oh, well, I'm sure if she knows I'm here.
Perhaps you'd better wait, Sally. She was rather specific.
What do you mean, specific?
She doesn't want to see you, Sally.
Oh,
I'll go in, doctor. Are you going to wait, Sally?
No. I'll go.
I left her prescription on the dresser, Pamela. 3 drops and 1/2 glass of water every 4 hours. May I drop you off somewhere, Sally?
Oh, thank you, doctor.
Kathy? Kathy, are you all right?
No. No, I'm not all right. I'll never be all right anymore.
You mustn't feel that way, dear.
I made a mess of this, too. I never do things right, do I, Pam? What will Henry think of me now?
They only know what I told them, Kathy. They think it was an accident. Don't worry about Henry, dear.
You must have been wrong, Pam. He doesn't love me. He couldn't. He would have told me. He wouldn't have just gone off with Sally.
Well, maybe you'll believe me now, Kathy. She's capable of anything. She owns it all now. The house, the money, and now Henry French. Don't you see, Kathy? He was the only thing she didn't have. He was yours, and she made up her mind she wanted him, too.
He never told me.
Of course he didn't. Sally never gave him a chance.
I hate her. It's awful, Pam, but I can't help it. I hate her.
So do I.
What can we do?
Well, maybe you'd better rest a while now.
No, tell me, Pam. What are we going to do?
There's a way. Yes, there is a way.
What?
Kathy. Kathy, we're going to kill her.
With the prologue of tonight's story, The Strange Sisters, the Signal Oil Company brings you another strange story by The Whistler. You've no doubt noticed those big red and yellow billboards that tell you you now go farther than ever with new Signal gasoline. Well, that's important. But unfortunately, there isn't room on those billboards to tell the equally important part of the story, the finer performance in new Signal gasoline that makes this good mileage possible. Here's what I mean.
New Signal's quicker starting naturally saves gas. Signal's smooth, fast pickup saves gas. And Signal's effortless anti-knock power that sends your motor purring up the steepest hills saves gas. So you see, the features in gasoline that make driving a pleasure are the very same ones that add up to more mileage. That's why we say your speedometer is the best proof of gasoline quality. If you want the tops in performance from your car, the logical place to find it is the new super fuel that now helps you go farther than ever. New Signal Gasoline. And now, back to the Whistler.
Well, Pamela, jealousy can do strange things to a mind like yours, can't it? And it's a peculiar mind, filled to the bursting point with frustrated black hatred for your sister Sally, accumulated during the long years the three of you spent under the same roof with your father. She always had everything, didn't she? You and Kathy had to take what was left and like it. Yes, Pamela, that jealous hatred has brought you to the point where you'll stop at nothing. Lying, cheating, twisting the truth in such a way that your poor, gullible sister Kathy believes the very existence of Sally condemns her to begging for crumbs at Sally's table when the bread is rightfully hers. And you've thought of everything, haven't you, Pamela? You're confident that Kathy is prepared for the talk with Sally that's bound to come sooner or later.
But, Kathy, I know I'm right about Pamela.
Why must you always talk about Pamela? Pamela did this if it wasn't for Pamela. Oh, stop it, will you? I tell you, Pamela's the only one in the world I can turn to.
Please, Kathy, please believe me, you're wrong.
I'm not wrong.
You are, dear. She's filled your mind with all sorts of hateful lies about me and Henry.
Why do you keep throwing that in my face? Henry, Henry, Henry! He's yours now, isn't he? You've got him. You were smart. Just like she said. All right, take him. Marry him. I don't care. Doesn't make any difference now.
Kathy, apparently there's nothing I can do or say that will make any difference in the way you feel. I promised Father I'd take care of you. Well, I'm leaving you the house and all the furniture. And I'm making arrangements for a trust fund that'll provide for you both.
That's charitable of you.
Under the circumstances, I think it is. I'll expect you and Pamela to be civil to Henry until we leave. Is that clear?
Is he coming here?
Yes.
To live?
Yes, for a week or so.
I don't understand.
It's very simple. We're going to be married tonight.
Yes, Pamela. Kathy was prepared, wasn't she? Sally was right. Nothing she could do or say would make any difference. Because Kathy is yours, isn't she? For too many years, she's depended on you for guidance, looked to you for advice, regarded everything you said as truth and everything else false. Yes, jealousy is a strange thing, Pamela. It's been there, deep inside you, for as long as you can remember. And it was convenient for you to find a cause for it. Sally and your father, the legacy, the house, the money. But that's gone now, isn't it, Pamela? Sally's been pretty fair about it. She and Henry are married now, and you have the house and your share of the money. That's what's strange about jealousy. The cause is gone, but it's still there, stronger than ever. And with it, your plan for murder.
Did you get the key to their room from Mrs. Stokes?
Yes. Here it is.
She doesn't know you have it.
No, she's gone to the store. I took it off the hook.
Give it to me.
What are you going to do?
Just look around a little.
Why?
Henry's things are up there. He brought them in last night before they left.
Well?
I'm just curious, Kathy. Just curious. All right, Kathy, you can put the key back now.
Did you find anything?
Yes, several things.
What?
Kathy, I'll do the shopping tomorrow.
Shopping? Pam, you never do.
I'll tell you later. It seems Mr. French is a vicious man, Kathy. Perhaps you're just as well rid of him.
Vicious?
Of course. He must be, dear. Otherwise, why would he keep a loaded revolver in the upper drawer of his dresser?
Well, Miss Pamela, what are you doing around here? Why, you ain't been in the store for 6 months now.
Oh, I thought the walk might do me good.
Well, what'll it be?
A small rolled roast, please. About 3 pounds, perhaps.
I got just the thing for you here. You ain't looking too well, if you don't mind my saying so. Something wrong?
No, nothing.
Oh. Yeah. Will this do?
Yes, that'll be fine.
It's kind of small.
Oh, it'll do, Mr. Watkins. You see, Kathy and I haven't been too well lately.
I thought so. Now, come on, what's up?
I know I shouldn't say anything, but I've got to talk to someone, Mr. Watkins.
Oh, gosh, is it that bad?
I don't know. It's Sally and that husband of hers.
You don't say.
Oh, they've been quarreling dreadfully. It's been going on all morning, and I just had to get away from it somehow.
They was only married night before last.
You won't say anything, will you, Mr. Watkins? Promise me.
Oh, sure.
Well, it's about the estate. Sally told him she was going to deed part of it to Kathy and me, and he flew into the most dreadful fit of temper. I could hardly believe my eyes.
Here's your sugar, Miss Pamela.
Thank you, Mr. Kennedy.
I'm sure sorry about that.
You won't say anything, will you?
Me? Oh, no. Ain't there anything you can do?
Let's see now. You wanted a shampoo and a finger wave, Miss Pamela.
Yes.
Gosh, you know, I can hardly get my mind on my work after what you told me.
You won't say anything, will you?
Oh, of course not, Miss Pamela. Not a word.
You're very efficient, aren't you, Pamela? The town of Newton is like a smooth pond. All you have to do is cast a few pebbles here and there, and the ripples spread over the whole surface, clear to the edges. There's another step now, a very important one. Sally is hostile and suspicious, and you're going to need her confidence.
Who is it?
Pamela.
Well, Pamela.
May I come in?
Must you?
Please don't make it difficult for me, Sally.
I don't understand.
I have something to tell you. I'd like to come in and sit down if you don't mind.
All right, Pamela. Now?
I've been doing a lot of thinking, Sally, and I haven't slept much. Not since you told us about the house and the money.
Yes?
It was so unexpected, you see, it threw me a little off balance.
What are you trying to say?
Oh, you know me so well, Sally. The past few years have been hard, and I know I've been unreasonable and difficult.
Pamela, you're trying to say you're sorry, aren't you?
Oh, I'm so clumsy at this sort of thing. Oh, I do so want to have you and Henry forgive me.
Oh, my dear. I really believe you mean it.
I do, Sally, I do mean it. And I'm going to try to make Kathy understand, too. You're right, Sally. I've been such a terrible influence on the poor thing.
Pam, darling, I'm so happy that it's working out.
Oh, Sally,
Come on, now. Let's forget all about it. I'm sure Henry will understand. It's odd, isn't it? I had the feeling underneath that somehow it would work out. I just knew it, Pam.
Thank you, Sally.
Thank you. Now, you go on downstairs and tell Kathy. I've got to finish the packing.
Packing? Well, but you're not leaving until the end of the week.
Henry has to make a business trip to New York. Some things he has to settle up before we leave.
Well, when's he going?
Tonight. He's leaving at 9. Oh, that reminds me. I must call the cab. He said to be sure to have it here for him promptly at 9. Now, you run down and tell Kathy it's all cleared up, will you?
Oh, of course, Sally. Of course. That's what I get for avoiding them. How could I have been so stupid?
Oh, it's all right, Pam. Henry will be back.
Don't be ridiculous. He's leaving for New York tonight, and they're taking the steamer from there in 4 days. No, Kathy. He's not coming back. He'll send for her, and she'll meet him there.
But isn't there some way?
There's only one way. It's got to happen tonight.
Oh, I'm scared. Pam, maybe...
Oh, stop gibbering, Kathy. The town is ready for it, and it's going to happen. Henry French is going to shoot his wife in a fit of temper and try to leave the country.
Pam, the gun. How are we going to get the gun? You see, we can't do it. We can't do it without the gun. And it's in his dresser, and she's up there.
I said stop gibbering. I've got to think. Turn on the light. It's getting dark in here.
Yes, Pam. There.
Light. Yes. The light. That's it. The light.
What is it, Pam?
The basement. Kathy, the fuse box is in the basement, in the furnace room.
The fuse box?
You'll get here about 6. I'll go down in the basement and unscrew a fuse. The lights will go out. You know Henry, he'll trot down to the basement to fix it.
What about Sally?
I'll wait till she's downstairs. You'll be on the second floor in a room at the end of the corridor. And then, when he leaves, you can go into the room and get the gun.
You can see it pretty clearly now, can't you, Pamela? The people versus Henry French, the charge murder. It's easy to think there in the basement as you wait in a dark corner after you unscrew the fuse and listen to the confusion upstairs as they stumble around in the dark. Then, as an afterthought, you find an old blown-out fuse on the shelf and screw it into place, just in case Henry might wonder how a perfectly good one could come unscrewed by itself. Then, when it's over, you return secretly to your room at the end of the second-floor corridor.
Did you get it?
Yes, here it is. I wore my gloves, Pam, just as you told me.
All right, now listen. We haven't much time. He's down there now waiting for the taxi. Have you got your watch on?
Yes.
Now, let's see. Oh, luminous dial, that's good. Now, listen carefully. The taxi is calling promptly at 9:00. Understand, it's going to happen shortly after he leaves. About 9:05.
Who's going to do it?
You are.
Oh, Pam.
You've got to. I'll have to be upstairs. You'll be in the basement. Henry will leave in the taxi at 9:00, and I'll get Sally up on the second floor on some pretext. At 9:05, I'll scream that you've fallen down the basement stairs. She'll run down.
Yes, Pam. I understand.
Now remember, not until after 9:00. We've got to be sure Henry is gone.
All right, Pam. I'll look at my watch. I promise.
Good. Now you'd better get down there. It would be rude of me not to be there to say goodbye to him.
So the time has come, hasn't it, Pamela? 40 years of pent-up hatred is about to find release at last. For the first time in your life, you're actually cordial to Henry as you make small talk with him in the entrance hallway. And you feel a glow of satisfaction as you watch him carry his bags to the waiting taxi. Then, just as you begin to wonder why Sally isn't there to see him off, you hear a foot on the stair and your heart stops.
Sally.
What's the matter?
Why, the suitcase. You're in traveling clothes.
Well, what's the matter with that?
You're going to?
Oh, that's it. I guess I'm not used to having you concerned about me, Pam. As a matter of fact, we decided just 5 minutes ago. I convinced Henry that walking out on his wife after 4 days of marriage was a pretty dirty trick.
Yes, dear, I'm coming.
Well, goodbye, Pamela. I'll wire you if we decide not to come back.
Sally, you can't.
What's the matter?
Nothing. Nothing, Sally.
You watch, unbelieving, as she walks down the steps to the taxicab. It failed, didn't it? Just like everything else you ever tried. Sally succeeded and you failed. There's a lump in your throat. You're all choked up with disappointment and bitter, corrosive hatred. Then suddenly, you realize there is another way. You've got to get to Kathy and tell her. You glance at the clock, 8:45. It's still safe. Then over to the basement door.
Kathy! Kathy!
Whistler will return in just a moment with a strange ending of tonight's story. Meantime, I'd like to tell you about an interesting experiment I witnessed the other day.
An automobile motor that had been driven 35,000 miles without taking the head off was being torn down for inspection. Ordinarily, you'd expect to find a good deal of carbon in the cylinder head and worn motor parts. But this motor was remarkably clean, free of carbon, and all parts were in excellent condition. Now, the thing which makes these results so interesting is that this motor was lubricated only with Signal 4-Star motor oil. A Signal engineer who was present, however, explained to me why Signal 4-Star oil takes such good care of motors. Because of solvent refining, one of the latest and most costly developments in petroleum engineering, Signal 4-Star motor oil has three important advantages. One, forms less carbon, far less by actual tests than many leading brands. Two, its tougher film clings to moving parts, protecting them from wear and sealing in power. And three, Signal 4-Star oil flows freely, instantly on coldest mornings, yet doesn't thin out when your motor is hot. In these days when motors have to last and last, your motor needs this triple protection. You can get it by making your next oil change a change to the better, a change to Signal 4-Star motor oil. And now, back to the Whistler.
So it didn't work out, Pamela. You're a failure, even in debt. And without you, Kathy is lost. She's helpless now, cringing before the sharp questions the officers throw at her, trying futilely to lie her way out of a hopeless trap. And Sally stands there, unbelieving, as the hatred, the jealousies come to the surface for all the world to see. More questions, more stumbling answers, then still more and more, until finally...
Take her away, Joe. Well, there you are, Mrs. French.
I can't believe it. It's so fantastic.
Yeah, it is at that. They knew Mr. French was leaving at 9. Planned to kill you with his gun.
In the dresser drawer. That's where he kept it.
Pamela was smart, Mrs. French. But she forgot one thing. The clock on the wall read 8:45. So she figured it was safe to open the basement door where Kathy was waiting to kill you. She forgot it was an electric clock. When she pulled the fuse down there and cut out the current, the clock lost 18 minutes.
Next Monday at 9 o'clock, the Whistler will bring you another strange tale. The Whistler is broadcast for your entertainment by the marketers of Signal gasoline and motor oil and fine quality automotive accessories, and by your neighborhood Signal dealer. This program, produced by George W. Allen, based on a story by Bernard Girard and Zane Mann, music by Wilbur Hatch, is transmitted to our troops overseas by the Armed Forces Radio Service. That whistle is your signal for the Signal Oil program, The Whistler. This is Marvin Miller speaking, reminding you to look for those familiar yellow and black circle signs that identify those popular Signal Oil stations in 7 western states from Canada to Mexico. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
This has been a Cryptic County podcast. To listen to our original storytelling podcasts and for all things suspense, horror, and weird, check out CrypticCountyPodcasts.com, where you'll find shows like Let's Not Meet, a true horror podcast, and Odd Trails, a true paranormal podcast. We'll see you next time. Stay safe.
You know what ought to happen next? If this was a horror story...
That's what ought to happen next.
It did.